The Ascension of the Lord. Are we here to celebrate some image of Jesus with a jetpack zooming up into the clouds? I sure hope not, because this feast is so very rich. The story of Jesus ascending to the Father must be really important. Every time we say the creed, we say we believe it. We just heard two versions of it. First, from the very beginning of the Acts of the Apostles, and then from the very end of the Gospel of Mark. And there's wonderful consistency in what both Mark and Luke are telling us. Luke wrote the Acts of the Apostles, remember. Our translation today begins the book of Acts, verse 1, chapter 1, with Luke writing that in his gospel he had dealt with all that Jesus did and taught until the day he was taken up. All that Jesus did and taught. But the literal translation of Luke's original Greek is this: I dealt with all that Jesus began to do and teach. And then immediately Luke gives us his account of the ascension. And then we hear the last verses of the Gospel of Mark, giving us another account of the same scene. Remember, Mark's Gospel is the first written Gospel. And in the first verse of the first chapter of this first Gospel, Mark calls the whole story, Mark calls his Gospel, the beginning of the good news of Jesus. Both Mark and Luke are trying to remind us at very key points in their text that the work begun and embodied by Jesus of Nazareth is meant to continue. We're in the Easter season. It's our central celebration of Jesus Christ risen and present in the world. So what does this ascension story add to that? What does it do to increase our understanding of Christ the risen one? Is it just Jesus saying goodbye on his way to retirement in heaven, as if it were some physical place? Benedictine monk Brother David Stendhal Rast writes beautifully about the ascension in a way that I think is very helpful for moving more deeply into the real meaning, the deep truth here. He reminds us, heaven is not a place. Rather, he says, it is a dynamic point of departure from which God's power breaks into the world. With his ascension, the risen Christ returns to his point of departure. He ascends to the source from which God's love gushes forth. We've been reading about the Easter events, the encounters of the apostles with the risen Christ. And in that we have assurance that Jesus crucified is Christ risen and alive. Brother David writes the words, "He ascended into heaven," wants to say with what kind of life he is alive, with God's life. Yet somehow Jesus is now hidden from us. We cannot see God, but we can experience, and I'm still using Brother David's words here, we can experience the divine blessing as life force throbbing in the veins of the universe. The risen Christ is with God. Thus, like God, the risen Christ is concealed. Yet his power to move human hearts to compassion, to deep respect for others, to self-esteem, continues to be at work in the world. His life is hidden in God. This is the central point of the passage. And we can sense the current, the presence of this hidden life pulsating as blessing through the whole universe and through our innermost being. Now, all of the scriptural accounts of the Ascension give us Jesus commanding his disciples, telling us to go into the world and teach. If the risen Christ is hidden in God, it is only through the compassion, the labor, the creativity of those who have faith in him that he can work in the world. This whole train of thought is borrowed from Brother David's book, Deeper Than Words, Living the Apostles' Creed. Borrow it or buy it, but read it. It's wonderful. And in that book, he shares a poem by a woman named Patricia Campbell Carlson. It's entitled Trillium. This picture in front of me is a trillium blossom. There's one at the side door and one at the back door as well, if you're not familiar with a trillium flower. It's a perennial flower that is found in colder climates than ours. It likes to live in the shade in the woods in places like Minnesota and Wisconsin. It has one very bright blossom per stem, and it's very Trinitarian, these three very distinct petals. In her poem, Carlson recalls the tendency that I think we all had, that very young children have, to draw the sky, when you're drawing a picture, to draw the sky or heaven as just a little blue strip, a little blue line across the top of the page, only with more maturity bringing the blue of the sky back into contact with the rest of the picture. Here's part of the poem. All along this hill, trillium, white as Christ's robes when he ascended into heaven. Heaven used to be a strip across the top of my crayoned page with never any stairs to get there. All at once, the bottom drops out. The trillium draws light from millions of miles away and streams it down to even the most secluded root. A child learns to color the whole sky. Buy the book just for the whole poem. I want to suggest this, my fellow children of God, as our exercise for the coming week. No matter how deeply buried or how overshadowed or secluded you might feel, let your roots be receptive to the life energy of the divine light that streams toward all of us from the ascended Christ. Allow that light to penetrate all darkness within you. Be healed by it, be fed by it, and then color in a little more of the sky. Become a more intentional part of the connection between heaven and earth. It's the most joyful thing we can do.